Welcome to the Dribble Podcast, your weekly fix of all things Perth Wildcats and Aussie basketball, presented by Perth Now.
Hello and welcome once again to the Dribble Podcast, the place to come for your weekly Perth Wildcats fix. My name's Chris Robinson from Perth Now in the West. And joining me every week, three-time NBL champ and Perth Wildcats vice-captain, Greg Heyer. G'day, Greg.
Oh, it's a nice, lovely day outside and nothing better to record a podcast and talk about our weekly Wildcats fix and the hoops. So I'm pumped. It's a good week.
We should record one outside just one of these days just to take advantage of some of the weather. From the top, mate, an injury update for your good self. We saw you, unfortunately, only lasting the best part of a minute last Saturday night, I should say, in the big win. How is the calf coming along?
Yeah, it's obviously wasn't ideal. It was a very frustrating little setback, as you would say. It's leading up to it, it's the best it's felt. I mean, the previous week against Sydney, leading into it, I was quite tentative. I could say, even those training blocks was more so just trying to get through it and trying to get those games underneath my belt. But I didn't lay back in those games, but sort of during training, I just sort of was a bit, hesitant and doing my new usual physical antics, O-boards, doing all that sort of stuff. So last week was it's the best I felt since the injury, and so leading into the game was really good. Sort of didn't pull up that the best on the Friday, but from all the obviously the coaching staff or the support staff knew that. I felt really confident heading into the game, but just sort of that second explosive action, as you say, explosive, and definitely not something that's linked to me.
Wow.
But yeah, it just sort of re-aggravated. So it's because of the calf injury, there's scar tissue and all that sort of stuff. So it's pulled up considerably well. Even I was able to do a calf raise straight away, and that's all really positive signs. And started training. I was doing sprints and all that sort of stuff today, and honestly felt like, I said to Josh, if they needed me to play tomorrow, I'd be in there in a heartbeat. There's nothing really holding that back. But we'll take a real conservative approach because obviously there is a bit of a setback, and that rules me out for this weekend. And we'll see from a workload standpoint how many games I'll play leading into the playoffs. But all indications hopefully will be from next week I can play. But it'll just be, I guess, managing that and being a lot more smarter with it. I'm one of those guys that love to, on a day off, come in and get extra shots up, maybe work on a couple of things, quickness, agility, whatever. Even the days we don't lift, I like to come in and just try and put myself through a little bit of a routine, a workout, just to, I guess, from my own personal standpoint, to feel good about myself and know that I'm putting in the extra work and doing that. But it's going to be the point where I'll have to sacrifice that, because when you look at it, if you train, leading into it, you train Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you don't have a day off. And from a workload, if you've suffered injury, you've got to be a bit smarter. So unfortunately, something that I'll have to sacrifice, but in order for me to play games, which is the most important thing, it's not about my mindset, I'll have to be a bit smarter.
Yeah, got to listen to the body, especially when it happens for the second time in the space of, what, 6 or so weeks. How tough is it to, when that happened in the first minute of the game, for you to still be on the bench and then sort of try and put that out of your mind and focus on the team, cheerleading, getting around the guys, what you have to do? How tough is that to sort of switch between those two?
Yeah, I mean, from a natural standpoint, I was extremely disappointed. I mean, got elevated in the starting group, which was, for me, I sort of was like, look, I've got a two-three-minute burst. I said it to JP. I said, oh, look, don't hold back here. I mean, obviously, it's this point, but I said, I'll be here for 2-3 minutes. I'm gonna go absolutely gung-ho, be balls out and come off gas, but be ready. And that's what my mindset was, just to be impactful and to do that. So for me, I was, raring to go. And so to sustain an injury in a minute, it's gut-wrenching. It's obviously, I put a lot of hard work in to be in preparation for that. And it sucks. And, I had to from a selfish standpoint, I mean, I went to the back because I just sort of was like, far out, you know, like, and more so you're thinking that could be the season. And, you know, like, obviously we've got a great opportunity to win another championship. So all those sort of things going to hit straight away. But, and I think it's a natural behavior to be disappointed. If not, you're not living. But, yeah, then I sort of was like, okay, maybe this is the best thing for me right now is to, I'm at the game. And, you know, if it was that injury, then I would have been sitting at home. But I had to really focus on the guys, and I made sure I was up and about, and to really, I guess, lend a hand on the bench and provide a little bit of feedback. And I think, yeah, I mean, that was, I had to, I guess, distract myself because from all those negative thoughts. Otherwise, yeah, you can sort of, you know, start swimming in some emotions. So it was good to be, it was a really, obviously, fantastic win, which I'm sure we'll talk about later, but it was just to get around those guys was important.
Yeah, the determination of the team and just the energy and the hustle of the team in that big win over the Breakers, things that we probably hadn't seen too much of over the past 3 or 4 weeks. What did you like most about what you guys were able to put out on the floor?
I think from looking at it and reflecting, I think what the most pleasing thing was the amount of talk and, I guess, action that we were asking for during the week. We obviously had a pretty important meeting. What we discussed last week on the show was about being honest, holding guys accountable, and, you know, putting what's on the training track, those hard, physical, intense sessions, to then translate them on the game time. And that was the perfect way to bounce back. I think if you had another poor performance, you'd be searching for answers, because everything that we asked for as a team, we did. And whilst it wasn't a perfect game, don't get me wrong, there was a lot of positive steps, and we're trying to build. And so, you know, we've got a fantastic opportunity this weekend to continue building. But from that standpoint, you know, I thought there was contributors across the board, but a lot of things that we discussed during the week that needed to be put in front of the bright lights, and that was being unselfish, and crystal ball didn't go through, but, you know, we had nearly five guys in double figures. Our offense was really fluid. You know, there was just unselfish guys are moving, just reading each other, and then obviously our defensive intensity, and that the third and fourth quarter really opened up, and that's been the case of so many of our championship years, is that's been the backbone and a staple of how we've been successful. Once that picks up and elevated, we're tough. And so we really, that fourth quarter start, I think there was just infectious energy. DC brought it, and just some big plays, Clint hitting a three at the end of the third quarter, that we really, that momentum that we've been sort of lacking, we didn't really have those big sort of game breaker plays, and then once we got stranglehold, it was really good. So from that standpoint, it was huge,
and getting points out of your defense as well, which we touched on last week. Damian Martin throwing that pass to Bryce Cotton for the dunk, I mean, that just sort of seems to be part of your identity when you're up and rolling.
Exactly right. That's what we've been lacking, is just to get those easy buckets. And when you're sort of at the point where you're sort of struggling, and you know, your half court sets don't go, you need a couple of those cheapies, and that's what happened. We got a couple of big blocks, a couple of big defensive rebounds leading into easy transition points, and that then allows a little bit more guys, a bit more settled guys, will screen harder, guys will cut faster, you know, and that sort of helps, and that stems from defense, and that's what's been our identity. And when you get away from that, then you don't know what you're doing. There's a reason why the guys we recruited are like that. You know, JP is, when we looked at him at the start of the season, as a replacement for Devondrick, there was three guys there, and we thought, well, who do we go? You know, and there was guys that obviously were more offensively minded, more gifted in terms of being able to, you know, shoot the ball better, you know, stretch the floor. But then we thought, who would fit our system the best? And JP did that because of his intangibles on the defensive end. And, you know, once he, I guess, believes that and buys into it, that's when we're going to be even tougher. And hopefully we'll see that come this weekend.
JP was the guy that you replaced in that starting five, albeit briefly, on Saturday. Trevor Gleeson hinted this morning that he'll return to the starting five. So we expect to see that against Adelaide. Can you talk us through, when was that decision made, the starting five decision, and JP's mindset? What kind of character is he to respond to that? Because it's not necessarily a demotion. It's not necessarily a bad thing. We see some terrific players in this league coming off the bench. But some players would take that the wrong way. How did JP sort of respond to that?
In the most respectful manner, you know, when I'd sort of, I've had guys in the past where I've, you know, DeAndre Daniels or, you know, and you go and you're a bit bothered as well, because as a guy that, you know, sometimes you start, if your teammate isn't that more that embracing, then you're sort of questioning yourself. You're like, well, hold on, I'm feeling a role quite well. But JP was nothing but pumped, you know, in terms of he knew that whatever he was, if he was going to come off the bench or not, he was going to be a contributor. And so his energy was very positive, and that's what you want. And it was just made just before the game. So sort of as I was in the locker room and sort of got done with my preparations, just sort of got the heads up. So I'd been training with the starters that week, so it wasn't something that I was like, oh, okay, this is very out of the blue. But it was just a sort of a decision on that phrase.
We saw at one point Damian Martin picking up an unsportsmanlike foul, which is a very rare.
He's a dirty
occurrence.
Guy.
It was a questionable call, to say the least. The ref sort of, it was for a big hack. He got a bit of the ball, so got a lot of arm. The ref sort of discussed it and then ended up giving the call. Trevor Gleeson's reaction on the sideline, where he said, "You've got to be bleeping me," to the referee, was quite humorous. But also, Damo, we picked up some audio during the broadcast where he went to the ref and said, "That's the first unsportsmanlike of my career." Damo's not normally someone who would take exception with a referee's call. Has that been brought up this week? And was that really the first unsportsmanlike of his career that you can recall?
What I'm figuring out with Damo, and is as he's getting older, is he's had this sort of, everyone has always thought Damo can do no wrong.
Yeah.
And especially like I used to hear when, like, even on as a commentator, I used to laugh and I'm like, oh, it's actually true. But like, say if there was a foul to occur, like Damo would complain, and then the commentators would be like, oh, it must be a bad call because Damian Martin never complains about a foul. Now, 9 seasons later, like, I keep seeing him complaining about calls. And I'll tell you why, he's one of the best defenders in the world.
Yes.
But, and this will maybe hurt us, but I see him getting away with some stuff that I'm like, look, I've been in here for 9 seasons too, and I'll do that, those same antics, and I'll get pinged for it straight away. Like, I get called. So I'm not sure about unsportsmanlike. Yeah, he is. I don't know if you go, it's one of those, we've talked about those rules and the interpretation. It's like, you know, like, and I understand that's the rule and it has to be called, but it's like some of that stuff as well. It's like, I mean, I got dunked on in the first minute, but like, even when I was thinking, I initially, 7 or 8 years ago, if someone went in the keyway and I had opportunity, I would have taken the guy's head off in a way. In a way, like, okay, I'm not hurting this guy, but I would have been like, nah, I'll make a play at the ball, and that means I might need to be a little bit physical. Now you got to think, it's an unsportsmanlike. And you think about it, there's so many things. If you get too unsportsmanlike, it's automatic ejection. Or if you get, so for example, say if Damo got unsportsmanlike, there was a delay of game warning, and then Damo gets a delay of game warning.
Easier.
He's ejected, you know what I mean? And so that sort of stuff now comes into play and you're just like, that's a bit silly. So, yeah, it's a bit stupid. I would say, yes, I don't think he's ever been called for an unsportsmanlike because he is that nice guy. But you need to start getting away from the call that Damo is always right, because, old age is getting grumpier, and so he's complaining a lot more about calls as well. So
is he like the favourite child that just can't do anything?
There's a no-brainer. I mean, I love him absolute death, but like what he gets RF training, you know, sometimes you'll be doing scout and you could do a simple backdoor, but because, you know, it's Damo, captain, you know, has pearly white teeth, you know, perfect hair, the best abs in the world. He just gets away with murder, really.
Yep.
But and it happens on the court, and it's frustrating because I want some calls too. Like, what do I need to do?
This is why we have you on the podcast, to remove the halo around Damian Martin's head. So it's high time. One of the other things that caught my eye on Saturday night that not a lot of people would have seen, Bryce Cotton did the post-game press conference, came in as the Perth Wildcats representative.
Okay.
Terrific games.
Yep.
With 27 on 12 shots, which is ridiculous.
Yep.
We only noticed as he's walking out, he's wearing Reece Vaik's singlet. So Reece Vaik, one of your development players.
Yep.
a little bit bigger than Bryce, it's fair to
Massive.
Say. So the singlet was a little bit
swimming
bigger
in
on
him,
Bryce.
Yeah.
Were you aware of that?
It was a bit of a joke. I mean, Weapon was, is, I mean, they're boys, they hang out all the time, yeah. But literally Bryce had already taken off his uniform and then was sort of like, they said, oh, you're in the presser. And Reese was like, well, you won't wear my singlet. And he was like, I will. And so he was like, oh, okay. And so as he put it on, he was basically swimming in it.
Yeah, just wanted something a bit looser.
And I think Reese wanted a little bit of recognition, like, hey, like, help me out a little bit. And Bryce is a team player and was all for it. So I think Wade, our media manager, was like, oh, I don't know if this is a good decision. Hopefully it's pays off. But I'm glad he picked up on it because Bryce is one of the – he's a better human being than Damo. So, okay. You know, you've never seen Damo wear, you know, Mason Bragg's jersey. So he's got one up. But, it's good on him.
Okay, we'll have to see if Damo will respond to the challenge
exactly.
And maybe chuck on someone else's singlet if he does the press.
I reckon this is going to catch on. Everyone's going to be wearing different jerseys and sooner or later the Wildcats head office won't be happy with it.
All these hybrid jerseys running around. Let's switch gears. I want to talk about something a lot more serious, really. That's social media. Obviously, you guys were up until last weekend in a little bit of a funk. There was plenty of feedback about the Wildcats. Are they too old? Are they too slow? Is the era over? Do the following players need to be cast aside, et cetera, et cetera? As far as social media feedback and trolls and all the rest of it, it's becoming, certainly from our point of view, it's becoming much more common.
Yep.
How do you guys, as players, as athletes, as humans, sort of respond to that? How much do you take notice of it? How much do you use it as motivation? Or do you ignore it? I mean, you've been called... You know,
a lot.
Things. I think you got caught a crab at one stage last season, and then after you guys won the title, you used it, you know, sort of show that you used it as motivation on social media. How do you guys sort of respond to that, and how much do you hear when those words are coming through?
Look, I think you'd be lying if you say you weren't a part of it, or sorry, to be aware of it. So I do these sort of presentations for my mental health organisation to deal with it in a way, and you know, at some point it is cyberbullying. You know, and we've obviously seen the recent death of a young girl to it, but.
Yep.
You know, it's a fantastic platform, you know, social media, to allow us to engage with fans, and fans to engage with athletes to engage with athletes. And, you know, I'll take you back. When I first started playing for Wildcats, it's funny. When I first got involved, I mean, I got the blue tick on Twitter and it was like the biggest thing in the world. And because I was a development player, I was like, yep, this is the best. And, you know, when I first started, no one really sort of knew who I was. So every single game that I got on, like people, like if I hit a three-pointer, everyone's like, this guy is next up-and-comer, whatever. And I would read that and, you know, I'd relish in it and sort of embraced it. And then the next season, same deal, got my first contract. And because no one really knew sort of who I was and I didn't really have that much of a role, all the feedback was positive. And so what happens is 2 or 3 years later, he's starting to play a bit more, and that, you know, that underdog, and everyone's sort of embracing it and loving you. And I was, you know, I'd write back and thanks, mate, whatever, and really jumping in board. What happens is, though, is a few years later, when your role starts increasing and once in a while, if you have a bad game, is now the critics are a lot more hard on you. And I had a moment there, and I would say I got in the dangerous place because I was you know, putting my name on Twitter, seeing what people were saying, and because I definitely was enjoying what people were writing to me. But then once you start realizing what was said about you too, it does affect you. And you can't say, oh, look, it's a stranger. I mean, people would be like, oh, you don't even know about them. They're a fan. At the end of the day, irrespective of who they are, or, you know, it could be a robot, I don't care. If hurtful things are said about you, it's going to sort of wear on you. And it got to the point, I remember playing a game against Townsville, and I've written about it, but 3 or 4 years ago, I think, and we lost. 40 seconds to go, I think I missed 2 free throws to seal the game, and then I helped off a guy, and Leon Henry hit a 3. And it was both mistakes. One, I was like, I could have sealed the game with 2 free throws, and I helped off. I got on.
But also, Leon Henry did not hit that many threes.
No, yeah.
So
but,
you were pretty stiff there.
But it, yeah, so I got on, and I remember like sitting in the back of the room, but then like as I got home, I didn't sleep, but I just was on social media, and that was at my worst, my critical point. Yeah. And that's what I changed, but I was reading, and I was reading people that I had played against SBL with, or people with like up and coming juniors just ripping into me. And going absolutely berserk, but I was like, far out, like really, am I that bad? And I sort of started questioning myself, and I was in a bad place. I didn't sleep, and the best thing happened, we had a game 2 days later in Illawarra, and but I got to the airport and I just didn't want to talk to anyone. Trevor messaged me later in the night and said, like, mate, so head up, you got a chance to rebound, or, you know, to bounce back. And he came in the airport and he just sort of put his hand on his shoulder, and that sort of, I was like, that's all I really needed. But I was like, I made a promise then, look, I'm not going to get on social media. Like, I can't, it's just not healthy. And I ended up having an absolutely blind, I think I had a double-double. We had backs against the wall against Illawarra, big win. And I would have naturally just gone, typed in my name, and then relished, and everyone like, yeah, I've done such a good job. And I was like, nah, screw it. And that was a real big turning point. And even more so now I look at it, don't get me wrong, I've had banter, but I had to, my wife, it got to the point where my wife was, I'd come home after a bad game or if we had a bad performance on the road, and there's been times like my wife's been crying, and I was like, what's the issue? What's going on? And she was like, I was that close to just creating a username just to go back at people, because she couldn't understand the amount of hate and hurt that people were going, and this is our job, it's whatever. And she just wanted to defend me, and I had just get to the point where I was like, I said to her, my mum's been a part of it, she'd see it too, your best mates, and I said, just don't read it now. Like, you got to get to the point. I've had to remove myself from, you know, Wildcat fan sites, because I mean, I'll get invited, and because they can turn on you within an instant, and you love that fan stuff. But yeah, it's tough. And you know, I look at it now from a perspective, and we talked about motivation. I'm not really a big trash talker, but obviously I see some of that stuff, and not privy. I don't do it anymore, because I got to a point, me or wife Ainsley, I said it's cold turkey. I don't want to engage with those, because sometimes, irrespective of your opinion, you go, you know, you're a fan and you're entitled to it. Yes, I disagree with you. It's just not, you're never going to win a battle. At the end of the day, you know, it's tough. But that story about the crab, it never was a motivation for me. But at that time, I saved those photos and I was like, I'm gonna bring it up, because it's something I'm proud of. Like, I win a championship and I'm going to let them know. Like, and there's been times, yeah, you cop a little flack and whatever. And so I thought at that time I won a championship. You know what? I'm at the top of the world right now. No one's going to be able to touch me, and I'm going to have a little bit of enjoyment. Now, for some of the other guys, I know, like imports and stuff, like I've seen them save that stuff, use it for motivation. I want to prove doubt is wrong. But for me, it got to a point where it really consumed in my life. So it's not healthy. And it's tough. I mean, you know, from a statistical standpoint, and, you know, I look at it and go, you know, from a professional sport, athletes are more than entertainment, you know. They live a life, athletes. So we look at it and I go, now there's 88 athletes, professional athletes in the team, say 12. So there's, say, 90 athletes in the NBL. And the statistics in Australia is 1 in 4 will suffer from a mental illness. Now, obviously, no one's come being honest, but we've seen it in the AFL that 1 in 4 will suffer from it. And so these guys have a real life outside of their professional sport. So they either maybe have struggled from anxiety, depression, or whatever mental health illness that is there. So when people are going absolutely to town at the end of the day, just, I think you need a perspective and say, they're actually real people too. They're not just doing this for entertainment. It's not just a movie, you know? And yeah. I would hate to see it. I mean, there's a story of a young college kid, starting quarterback, only a month ago. I think he took his own life just because of the amount of hate. And obviously that shows that, you know, they're just not well resourced and no support systems. But, you know, it's tough. It's a fine line of trying to engage. And, you know, I still cop it now. And sometimes I just got to look at it and throw it to the side. Now, obviously, everyone has different ways of how they deal with it. But for us, you know, I think it's, you know, you don't want to take away from that platform of not being able to engage in fans. But I think there's also a fine line. And obviously, in recent weeks, you know, I've seen you know, friends that have, you know, commented about the Wildcats. And, you know, sometimes you even just want to say, look, mate, we are busting our tails. We're trying to do everything. We also know we've been embarrassed and humiliated. But we also do this for a living. You know, we're professional basketball players, you know. There's a reason you're not playing, you know, and we need to be honest and go, you know, if we could, people don't miss shots on purpose, you know. I would argue to all I'm here that guys don't give effort. I mean, that's why, you know, you play. Now, never question the character of a guy or the way that they play. Now, yes, we can play poorly, miss shots, bad defense, communication, whatever. But when someone starts questioning effort, that's when I get a little bit agitated because that's, you know, it's in control.
Yeah, and a lot of that hate is just so unnecessary. I mean, we're talking about, as far as supporters, we're talking about a minority.
Yeah, for
obviously,
sure.
The majority are terrific, but some of that hate is just so, there are just so many hot takes and so much unnecessary. I mean, from my point of view, I had one where in the 2013-14 season, the James Ennis season,
yep.
You guys were in the grand final series, one game, one at home, went to yep. Adelaide in game two, and yep. I was over there. And because Adelaide, the gym there is a lot older, they've sort of got sure. the wooden sort of floor that they can bang on. I tweeted at some point that the crowd here was louder. It was louder yeah, in that yep. building than it was in game one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With, you know, half the people there. And the amount of hate that I copped from
for sure.
about four or five Wildcat supporters, someone said, don't bother coming back to Perth, Judas, and all this stuff.
Jeez.
And I was like, yeah. first of all, I'm here to be impartial. I'm not rooting for either team.
Of course.
And secondly, I'm making an observation about the crowd. Some people just want to just jump in with those hot takes. And for athletes in particular, where your whole season, your whole mindset is quite often about don't get too high or don't get too low. If you're going really well, you stay humble. If you're going badly,
for sure.
there's always plenty of improvement to go. Twitter's not the place for that.
No.
Because Twitter, everything's either the best or the worst, and quite often it's the worst.
Yeah, and I think you can get away from the fact that sometimes you want to prove people wrong. I mean, there's been some times, and that's where I've had to say to people, and I've even, you know, last year we had the issue with you know, Jaron Johnson. And, you know, one time I was, and that was in our one of our biggest meetings, I remember seeing him on the plane and he had typed his name in and the amount of hate that was towards him, that was, and I said, thinking to myself, mate, he doesn't know these people, but I know it's affecting him because at the end of the day, and as I said, these are strangers, but and as a professional athlete, you know you're going to get criticised. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I remember when I'm obviously, you know, I've been, when I first came back from college and wasn't professional, I remember watching an Eagles game and, you know, you'd be like, why are you kicking it there? Just, you know, whatever. And you're like, and then you think about it, like, and now as a professional athlete, I'm like, well, you know, like, obviously you can still be critical and be mindful of that. But it's, you know, I look at Jaron Johnson and it weighed him down. And I got to the point where I was like, I said to him in that meeting, do not look at what's being said about you on social media, irrespective if you have a 50-point game or if you do a donut, because it is consuming you. You're using too much energy. And if you do it in the right way, yes, perfect, that's fine. But it was a negative thing for him. And I've had some times where, like, a couple of years ago when it was consuming me, like, there would be post people, and it still happens now because my wife says it's the same people, but I would have a good game, and someone would just like tag someone else in, or the same comment every single time. I'd have a poor game, the same thing would happen. I'd have a blinder, the same thing would happen. And you'd go, and I got to the point where I was like, I was frustrated first because I was like, first, I was like, what am I doing wrong? And, you know, my personality, I do want to be liked by a lot of people. That's just who, like, I don't think I'm, so I was like, what am I doing wrong? What have I done to be a part of these people's lives, so irrespective of how I play, if I play good, they still want to talk crap. Like, I couldn't understand it. And so then I just got to a point, like, I was like, I give up. I'll have a good game and it's going to happen. And you sort of just laugh at it. But I think once you get to that point where it consumes and it becomes dangerous, yeah. And you know, I think from a professional, and it's obviously a lot of people have been speaking about it because professional athletes, yes, it's all good to say, hey, get away from it, just cold turkey. But you can't. Like, I mean, and why I say you can't, because, you know, in the newspaper, people want to talk. I've had people talking to me when I've got dinner for my wife. Like, people come up, and that's the same. I know it's not online, but people want to give you feedback to the point where, yes, like, while the last few weeks, obviously, I wasn't going on Perth Wildcat fan pages, but my mum was like, "Oh, I've heard like you guys should be doing this," and I'm like, "What are you talking about? You don't even know basketball." She's like, "Oh, I read it on a page." I'm like, "Get off the page straight away, because I guarantee if you scroll four or five times, the only reason why you're not reading about Greg Hyatt is because he's not playing, and so yeah, get off it because it's dangerous." But and that's funny because my mum is a hippie vegan who just found Facebook last year, and sooner or later she's going to start reading about her son doing that. But that's what I'm thinking. You can't hide from it, and so it's got to be the point of how you can manage it. And you go, okay, there's that point. I mean, sometimes now I just block the person because I'm like, irrespective of what they say or what I do or what I say, they're going to be on their own belief. I mean, some people, why they vote Liberal and Labor, they don't care. That's how it is, and you've just got to really go there and just try and manage it the best way you can.
Yeah, fast becoming a mantra of our society. Don't read the comments. A quick word on Adelaide. We hear you guys have got twice this weekend at home Friday night and then on the road Sunday. They're obviously one of the best teams in it, sitting second on the ladder at the moment. How have you assessed them? And they play real quick.
Yeah, for sure.
They play up and down the court. How do you guys sort of, I mean, do you think it'll be a track meet kind of couple of games, or do you try and control the tempo?
Well, for us, you need to. I mean, they shoot, Mitch Krukoff, I think, shooting above 60%, which is unbelievable for a guy playing in the wing. But that's what they want to do, get out, you know, DJ Leaks off a rebound, and you've got to really slow the game down. They've been like that since Gary Irvin got put in the team a few years ago, and that's really, that fits their style and fits their personnel. For us, I mean, they're dangerous because they're young, and why I say, because they're young, but they're arrogant, and in a good way, because when they get on a roll, and with young people, their energy becomes contagious, and they just sort of, they play confident, and that's when you see like a Majok Deng just start firing away, Drimmick start firing away, and you know, they've got a pretty talented team across the board. I mean, you've got Ramon Moore coming off the bench, who I think he had 17, 10 and 7, 10 assists and 7 boards. Like, that's pretty good numbers off a goal coming back. Matt Hodgson, who's a Boomers center, coming off the bench as well. And so, yeah, for us, you need to slow the game down, because you know, that they're gonna, you can't get in track meet. You know, that's just not our style. We've got a stamp on that. For us as well, they dare guys to shoot, so you got to have a lot of belief. You know, there's a lot of times they've got guys just standing in the keyway, and they've done that since we won that very first championship against them. They dare guys, and you know, to let it fly, or you know, get someone else open. So yeah, it's always a very interesting encounter. But you know, as I said, you know, you've got a guy like Mitch Krukoff, who I think is, and I said last week, one of the toughest matchups to go against. If you get allow him to have a full head of steam in an open court, it's tough to stop. So yeah, you've got to really nullify those sort of those options straight away.
Yep, should be a very entertaining couple of matches this weekend. One quick fan question, because we're running out of time. This one from James T. Do you have a team song that gets sung when you win? I know that you certainly do, because we often hear it from next door in the media room, and it quite often happens when the losing opposition are doing their press conference, which kind of rubs a bit of salt into their wound. What can you tell the fans about the same song?
Yeah, we do. It's an in-house song. We you know, you'll hear it it's sung about 8 million times after a championship win. But yeah, no, it's just something that we've had since I brought in. It was actually, I think, maybe the second year. So the club, the players got it. But yeah, it's something that you generally do. I tell you what though, as an opposition player, if you hear a team song sung while you're sitting there, it is one of the worst feelings. I mean, against Sydney, when we lost there, we're sitting there, and you know, guys are sort of actually, no words are spoken, and then some guy starts speaking up, and as I guess at the critical point, like, we heard them chirp up, and like, I literally if there was a moment where I could smash, punch the whiteboard or fight one of my teammates to say, let's get our finger out, you would, because you hate it. It is, you know, that definitely grinds your gears. So we don't do it on purpose, but it's always something that you want to do, yep, for sure after a win.
On the flip side to hearing, to feeling that pain when you hear the opposition.
For sure.
Is that the best part of a win when you're in that circle, those moments?
I love it. You know, it's, I think, you know, every time we win a championship, it's one of my prouder, like at that moment, I love it. I can't wait to do that, just to get everyone involved, from the masseuses to the physios to the doc, whatever it is, we all huddle around. But yeah, no, it's always nice to win that team song, because it's sort of, even, you got to celebrate the wins, you know. I think you got to do a good job of celebrating that. Once you lose the fact that, okay, then, yeah, you know, it's that much tougher. And, you know, people might say, oh, well, you win 18 times a year or whatever it is, but I think you got to do a good job celebrating wins. I think it's a pivotal to relish in success.
Yeah, that's what it's about. Crystal ball time, you, as you alluded to earlier,
were
very close last week. You said you'd had 5 guys in double figures. You had 4. And Jared Kenny finished with 9.
I know.
So I would have thought you'd be pretty fit.
And he was. I was hoping he could come back in at the end of the game. I think he got in and then he sort of just passed it off. I was like, no, I should have told him, mate, help me out for the crystal ball.
You definitely should have let him know that. And I said you guys would have a halftime lead for the first time in a long time, and you did.
There we go.
A great little run at the end of the second quarter. Mine for this week, I think, and not much has been said about this in terms of official, but I think you guys will officially wrap up a playoff spot for the 32nd straight year this weekend. You need to fend off Illawarra. They're the only team that could knock you out at this point. And the magic number between you guys is 3. So that is 3 combined, either 3 wins for you guys or 3 losses for Illawarra, or some kind of combination of that. They've got New Zealand twice this weekend. You guys have got Adelaide twice. I think you'll see sometime on Sunday you guys locking away a playoff spot for the 32nd consecutive year.
Impressive. Like hearing that. We're going to go 2-0 this weekend, but then as well from a personal standpoint, I'm going to say Damian Martin will hit a combined 5 3-pointers over the weekend. So just to stay on that motion.
He's going to be one of those guys that Adelaide might dare to shoot.
Yes. So I think Damo will hit 5 3-pointers over the weekend, which doesn't seem much, but I think we'll go a long way for us getting wins. So
it certainly will indeed. That's all the time we have. Greg,
thanks, mate.
Best of luck for the weekend rehabbing, and hopefully for you guys, you get a win, or 2 wins against Adelaide.
For sure. Sounds like a plan.
To our listeners, stay tuned to Perth Now and the West for all your sport news. We'll catch you next time.
The Dribble Podcast is brought to you by Perth Now, your home of sporting action from home and abroad.